This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. The GOP state convention is underway. We sit down with Chairman Paul Farrow and break down what you can expect. Plus, after Milwaukee was rocked by gun violence over the weekend, GOP candidates running for governor are touting their plans to tackle rising crime. And UW-Madison has hired a new chancellor to lead the flagship university. How she's fighting back against criticism from GOP leaders. All this and more on Rewind, your week in review for May 20th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Well, we have a special guest this week as the Republicans are kicking off their state convention. Paul Farrow is the chairman of the Republican Party of Wisconsin. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So I think there's been, you know, a little bit of disagreements among delegates and members of the grassroots regarding the endorsement process, whether to endorse or not to endorse. Can you just kind of explain what is the value of an endorsement?
Yeah, when you think about it, Emily, the endorsement process has been going on for the last year. When you think about candidates going out to the different caucuses at the county level, the different dinners, they're asking people for their support. What the endorsement process is at the state level is what we do throughout the whole year at different points. The county caucuses this past spring have endorsed candidates for the spring election cycle. The congressional districts are endorsing their congressional candidates. And the state party gets together at convention and every 2 years says, who should we support? When I look at it, I think of these people that are coming to the convention this weekend as the influencers. You know, we've got those individuals that are always there that you call up and say, hey, who am I supposed to vote for? This is our opportunity to really get input and have those individuals ask the candidates as they stand up on stage, do you share the same values we do? Do you have the same qualities that we're looking for in leadership of the Republican Party as we move forward to victory in November? And the endorsement is an opportunity for that delegation to say, yep, we want you there. And that's why we've put the threshold high. It's a 60% threshold. You know, when you think back, I think it was as late as 2010, we had a no endorsement box like we're asking this time. Senator Johnson was on the ballots at that point. Lieutenant Governor Clayfish was on the ballot at that point. So we've had this in the past. It's an option. And what we're doing is with a whole new group of individuals that are coming in, probably in the last 4 to 5 years, we're saying, take a look at what goes on, look at the candidates, listen to them. If you don't feel that the majority of the people are sharing what they have, then we should look at no endorsement because it gives us another 6 weeks, 6, 8 weeks to really look at them to the primary. But if you feel they share the mutual values of everyone, then let's give them an endorsement and support them as we move forward.
But be clear, though, what will the party do for endorsed candidates? Are we talking like multi-million-dollar ad campaign? Or because I know the parties use the August primary as a dry run for November, right?
Right.
So is it just as simple as your phone banking and saying, hey, by the way, we endorse so-and-so. We want you to vote in August. Make sure you're out there and engaged. But both of these folks along the way, like, what are you guys going to do for the endorsed candidate?
A lot of what we do is the infrastructure. So as the party, it's not the multi-million-dollar ad buy that we're going to do for the primary. Those will be post-primary as we work through the general. But in this situation, it's access to our team within to help them out, access to our donor base so that they can reach out to individuals and ask for funds as well during that campaign. But it also is prominence. When you look at the county offices, a lot of the offices say if there's an endorsed candidate, that's who we're going to present as a prominent spot in our office and work through.
What in a scenario where no one gets the endorsement, what happens then? And what is your prediction whether or not there will be a non-endorsement option or not?
I think there'll be a non-endorsement option. I think the Rules Committee did a really good job a few weeks ago putting together a thoughtful package of rules that include the non-endorsement. So I think that's going to get approved, so it'll be on the ballot. If we don't get the endorsement, then the candidates continue on just like they would anyway towards the primary. What we'll be doing from the party perspective is supporting the Republican theme as we move forward until we have candidates after August 9th.
So just for people at home, we're going to watch tomorrow, tonight, mm-hmm. Easter Saturday morning, to watch this process play out. Walk us through. We're convening at 8:30. First thing we're going to do is have this debate about the rules, right? And this will be an option for the delegates to debate. Do they want the no endorsement option on there? And the other rules package as well, about resolutions being called from the floor and all those kind of things. So tell us the process. They're going to have that debate, hear the speeches, and then endorsements in the afternoon, and then into
the evening and possibly a little bit longer. So what will happen is we'll convene at 8:30. I think we're going to take a moment. Tomorrow is Armed Forces Day. And so we're going to take a moment to recognize active members that are going to be our delegates that are out there. It's also Law Enforcement Week, so we're going to recognize our law enforcement members who are doing a wonderful job keeping us safe across the state. And then we'll get into the process. Before we get into the rules, Senator Johnson's going to speak and talk about what's been going on. We give an update from the legislature. The Rules Committee, as the chair of the Rules Committee, I'll present the rules as we created, ask for approval from the delegation. I believe there will be some conversations that we'll have. There might be some amendments that they want to look at changing. That's the great process that we go through, and hopefully adopt those by 11:30. Break for a quick lunch for our county chairs awards. Come back at 1 o'clock and then watch the show begin. And so that's the endorsement process. We'll hear the candidates speak, then we'll take the balloting for each office and then move on to the next one until we get done.
I'm sure there'll be a lot of lively discussions on the floor that we'll be hearing tomorrow. And as I kind of led off this conversation, a lot of grassroots members are kind of just frustrated, losing the last 11 out of 12 statewide races. How do you plan to unite the party after this weekend?
You know, it's one of the things that I've been doing going around the state right now. A lot of people look at 2018. They look at 2020. They look at the elections that occurred then. And what I remind them is we've been Republicans for a lot longer than just 4 and 6 years. There's been a lot that we have done in the past. When we have the majority, we got photo ID done. We got concealed carry. We got right-to-work legislation. We had budgets that were well within line and surpluses. You know, you look at Governor Evers right now, touts that he's got a rainy day fund. Governor Walker started that and really pushed hard to make sure we had a rainy day fund. Those are the things that we're going to get people to remember, and that's what I have. And when they start thinking about what we've done in the past, when we've had the majorities, when we have the ability to really create the direction for Wisconsin, we've done some great things. We're going to help them remember that's what we've done. We had some hiccups. You know, every now and then, you know, as we said, if you look at a history, we've never had it from a Republican-held office or a Democratic-held office from the beginning of 1776. So this is what happens. The changes occur. What we need to do is kind of reorganize ourselves, which is what we've done the last 2 years, and be focused and ready to go in November, and I think we'll be there.
So the Republican Party of Wisconsin has been interesting over the years. I remember going back to the Tea Party kind of movement. There was talk here of, oh, we don't really have that kind of like tension because the grassroots became the establishment a long time ago in Wisconsin. Now we're in a different position, though. I know you've been had some interesting moments at county party events with some people criticizing you. You've got 4 candidates for governor all running as outsiders in some way, shape, or form. What's it like to be the establishment right now? And is that, do you think there is a kind of an anti-establishment mood among your base with the way things are going?
You know, actually what I think it is people have defined establishment and don't know what their definition is. When I think about it, I came in the Tea Party movement in 2011 to the Assembly and moved on to the Senate and then left in 15 to become county executive. So as an elected official, I watch and listen to what people are saying. When they're talking about establishment, what they're talking about is lack of leadership. And their concern is that we haven't seen the leadership going. When you sit down and talk to them and say, look, since 2018, our leadership is blocking, is making sure that bad legislation doesn't occur. In this case, 2 budgets that Governor Evers put together are both over $1 billion in tax increases. The budgets that he signed had over $2 billion in tax cuts. That's what our responsibility is. But they don't see it occurring the way we did see victories where we have a Republican governor who's out there signing the bill saying this is what we're doing. What I try to do is educate people and say, this is what's happening. The establishment isn't an evil force because it's you. When you think about who we are in the Republican Party of Wisconsin, we are the people of Wisconsin. We're the grassroots efforts. In, as I look at the map right now and you see the colors, there's more red than there is blue. Blues in, are in very tight areas in primarily urban districts. But the rest of the state, when they realize that their standards, their thought processes are more aligned with what we're doing, they're falling and realizing we got to support the Republicans and saying this is what we're going to go through. And so for me, it's been changing that definition. It's not so much as establishment as a group of individuals are saying, you shall do this, and that's there's no other way around it. What it is together we're going to work to make sure that we've got a better peace, a better opportunity, and a better vision for leadership for Wisconsin.
Paul Farrell, Chairman of the Republican Party of Wisconsin, thanks so much for joining us and look forward to this weekend.
Thanks for having me.
In other news this week, the GOP candidates running for governor touted their tough-on-crime agendas. Now, all of these candidates have somewhat of a plan. The only candidate we haven't really heard from is State Representative Tim Brantham. Why are all these tough-on-crime agendas coming out right now? It's because Milwaukee's downtown entertainment district was rocked by gun violence over the weekend. Therefore, these Republican candidates are really calling on local leaders to start cracking down on crime. Here's some of their agendas. Rebecca Clayfish, who released her plan many months ago, wants to hire over 1,000 police officers and use officers from the state patrol to assist local police departments. She also suggested using a portion of the $3.8 billion surplus to pay for it. When it comes to Tim Michaels, he wants to hire more prosecutors, put more police officers in violent crime areas, and enact a two-year minimum prison sentence for felons convicted of gun possession. Kevin Nicholson, implementing mandatory minimum sentences and mandatory bail amounts for violent offenders. Now, like I said, of course, this comes after a very violent weekend and a violent weekend across the nation, JR. Of course, a lot of pressure was on Milwaukee leaders, local, and, you know, state lawmakers as well. But we heard from Mayor Johnson in Milwaukee basically say, I get it. I know what's going on. But the one thing they did do is he said he's now going to start cracking down on their curfew. Mm-hmm. So let's just take a listen from Mayor Johnson, then we'll get into the politics about this.
The increase in gun violence we've seen as the weather has warmed up, not just last weekend, but a couple weekends before that, cannot continue. So I've asked the Office of Violence Prevention as well as the Milwaukee Police Department to step up. At my direction, the police department will perform enhanced enforcement of the curfew ordinance that we already have on the books. Young people under the age of 17 must be off the streets and out of public spaces by 11 p.m. on weekends and 10 p.m. on weekdays. Standing on the sidelines is not an option. Lives are at stake, and the city's future depends on this sort of public safety.
JR, it's important to note that, yes, all of these candidates have their platforms, have their ideas to crack down on crime, but it's not going to come cheap. We really only heard from Rebecca Clayfish suggest using some of the Rainy Day Fund or the $3.8 billion state surplus. On the other hand, they're all putting pressure on Governor Evers. What have you done? Of course, he spent roughly, I believe, $100 million in violence prevention, used some ARPA funds for that, but kind of puts him in a tough spot during election year.
Well, think about it for Governor Evers. He's boxed in by a number of different forces. Number one, Evers' campaign on reducing the prison population. Wisconsin, I don't remember if we're number one or in the top five, but we incarcerate more black men per capita than any state or one of the top states for that in the country. That is an issue that Evers wants to address. He wants to reduce the prison population, period. We also over-incarcerate more people than other states per capita. There's that. He has an African-American base that he is trying to be sensitive to their concerns about crime and policing, right? Also a social justice based, a wing of the Democratic Party. So all these forces are putting pressure on him, including cases like the Parole Commission, where what do you do if you're him because there's this moderate vote he needs to win re-election that wants to see crime addressed. We've seen this kind of take off as an issue in the polling. We also know that it's one of his vulnerabilities, right? The violent protests in Kenosha and in Madison. The Republican case against Evers starts with Joe Biden in the White House and tying him at the hip to him. Law and order, public safety, those things. And then the issues with competency around the government, like the unemployment issue. Those are the big arguments against Evers this fits into one of the main arguments against his reelection.
And you mentioned the parole commissioner, John Tate. This week, we saw kind of a different maneuver from Senator Roger Roth, basically starting to circulate a petition. And if he gets 17 signatures, he would be able to force lawmakers to come back to Madison in a special session. And they basically want to vote on his confirmation. What that means is if they can vote down his confirmation, John Tate is essentially fired. Now, Tate has received a lot of criticism based on a man who was convicted of stabbing his wife in front of his children. He originally last week was going to gave him parole. And then Evers faced pressure. He sent him a letter. Even the family visited the state capitol saying, what are you doing here? He reversed his decision. Now, basically, Roger Roth is trying to take matters into his own hands. But the problem is that he's facing backlash, not backlash, but others who are kind of reluctant to do this and to come back to Madison to vote on this. Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemahieu basically said, well, you know, this is Evers' problem. We don't have to do this. Let him face the political consequences if he doesn't if he doesn't act on it.
Yeah, so again, this is a perfect example of that those pressures he's feeling, right? Originally, in the early part of last week, it was like, well, our hands are tied, so at the parole commission. Then Evers came out that letter on Friday after we had taped.
Right,
putting
yes.
pressure on John Tate to reverse the decision. Ultimately, it was his to do, and Tate reversed himself later on. Now, with this, the dynamic is interesting. So with Roth's petition, if you have a majority in each house, you trigger the extraordinary session. Or other way to do is have leadership call an extraordinary session,
right,
which is what prompted Assembly Org to circulate a ballot yesterday. The ballots are due at 1 o'clock today. That would okay an extraordinary session for Tuesday, May 26th, I believe it is. That puts a pressure on Senate Republicans because leadership there approved an extraordinary session. You would come in. Now, a couple things to think about. One, the Assembly GOP is saying this is all your problem. We're putting this on you guys in the Senate caucus. Two, if you come on the floor to take up Tate's nomination, you open the door to Democrats doing all kinds of things. You could have pulling motions on all kinds of bills that would put members in vulnerable positions to vote on things that are politically popular right now, just a few months out from election. Oh, by the way, do you really want to come back in the week before Memorial Day for a one-day session that's going to be it would be challenging.
Right. I'm sure it wouldn't just last a few hours. It would probably go on for a very long time. And Roger Roth also told me he believes the Assembly of Republicans are on his side. Mm-hmm. They're going to pass this to basically put it over to the Senate. He only had 5 signatures as of Thursday of what he told me. So he still has a ways to go, and he has to get that done by next week if he wants to call it.
Don't forget Roth is running for lieutenant governor.
Correct.
Forget that there's a little bit of motivation there.
Yes.
And the other thing, too, is if you fire Tate, who's Evers put in that office instead? And in some ways, this takes the attention off of this being an Evers problem and puts the attention on Republicans aren't on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that question. Also, has Tate now been somewhat reined in because Evers is going to keep pressure on him to not do something like this between now and November? All kinds of questions out there, but this is definitely a way to put pressure on Evers and Tate, like, we don't want this to happen again kind of thing.
Yeah, and it falls right into the theme that we're going to see tough on crime, mm-hmm. like we just mentioned before earlier in the show, and how that's going to be a lot of people are going to be probably talking about it also at the state convention this weekend. And another topic we don't talk about is a group that sued over the whole debate of Wisconsin fake GOP electors. Now, this lawsuit alleges a conspiracy by Donald Trump and his allies to overturn his loss in Wisconsin. So plaintiffs are seeking up to $2.4 million in damages that want to basically also disqualify Republicans to ever serving as electors again. Jeffrey Mandel, who's attorney for the plaintiffs, basically said it's essential to have accountability and make sure this doesn't happen again. GOP electors in the lawsuit have long argued that they were not trying to overturn the election results. Instead, they were just trying to ensure they had all their legal options open on the table. So, not real surprise here, JR, about this lawsuit, but it kind of is just a continuing theme that we keep hearing about wanting to hold these electors accountable. But we're still in 2022 talking about 2020.
So remember, the people who are involved in this, first, I think, went to John Chisholm, the Milwaukee County DA. He said they don't have jurisdiction because they don't live in Milwaukee. They've gone to the Dane County DA, Ishmael Ozan, who has yet to publicly respond, I believe, to this request to go after these guys. We also had the State Elections Commission, who Nancy rejected a complaint that was filed with them. The State Department of Justice rejected a request for this narrow kind of, it's really nitty-gritty law stuff there that even I'm having a hard time understanding sometimes. But basically, they wanted to go those guys falsely assumed an office. You should go after them for falsely assuming an office. Sorry if I'm oversimplifying that. There's that effort. The January 6th Commission out in Washington, D.C. has subpoenaed Andrew Hitt and another of the false electors. What I'm getting at is there have been many facets of this effort to target these guys. I don't know if anyone's going to be successful. It's more like putting pressure on them. And also you see nationally for lawyers involved in this, I don't say harassing them, but trying to hold them accountable for entertaining these, you could argue, somewhat damaging theories to our legal theories to our democracy. I just don't know if it's going to be successful in the end, but you see the pressure going on these guys, and I'm not sure they're going to let up anytime soon.
Also this week, UW-Madison finally found a new chancellor after Becky Blank is going to be heading to Northwestern University. I believe her last day was last week. But, of course, immediately, I would say, right after Jennifer Mnuchin, she's going to be the new chancellor, was selected, GOP criticism was almost immediate. We'll start with Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, who basically targeted her for some of her donations, political donations, her viewpoints on critical race theory, and basically saying that, you know, she needs to support free speech on campus and not politically correct ideologies. We also heard from Tommy Thompson, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, talked to him, and he was also a little weary about this pick. But now that she's chosen, he says, we kind of got to get behind her. Let's move on. That's kind of what we often hear from Tommy Thompson. He can have criticism, but let's all get together. Of course, he was the UW system president who recently stepped down from that. So, remains to be seen how she faces this criticism, but she was asked about it. She held a press conference with some of the reporters, and here's what she had to say. Let's take a listen.
I am a big believer in a big tent approach to ideas in a university. I think that freedom of speech is incredibly important, and we need to create spaces for ideas of all different kinds to be part of the dialogue within universities. I think that's part of what universities are for.
Honestly, I don't take those comments very seriously. I don't think that's realistic. I would like for those folks to meet Chancellor Mnuchin before they threaten our funding. I don't think they really intend to do that. As I said before, we don't have the luxury of having two sides of the aisle. And if there is common ground in Wisconsin, certainly it must be the UW system. The Board of Regents feels very strongly about that. The core of what we need to accomplish together with the legislature, with our constituencies, is that common ground of advancing the university system for the good of the state of Wisconsin.
So her vote, it's important to mention, from the Board of Regents was unanimous, but I think she's regardless going to face some inroads trying to make a relationship with GOP leadership.
So with that unanimous vote, remember, right now the Board of Regents, it is an 18-member board, 11 are Evers appointees, 5 are appointees of former Governor Scott Walker, a Republican. There's one member who, State Superintendent Jill Underley, who's there because of her position, also the head of the Tech College Board, there because of his position. Why I'm bringing that up is the Walker appointees who were there all voted for her. Now, one of my colleagues asked Robin Voss, like, look, you're criticizing this vote, but it was unanimous, and the Walker appointees supported it. He's like, oh, that's groupthink. You know, when you send regents up to Bascom Hall, they all kind of buy into university culture kind of thing. But again, it was unanimous. Also, she says she's a free speech defender. Well, free speech is not a beholder anymore on college campuses, right? So what's that mean? Because I think Robin Voss may defend it differently than, or define it differently than she does. So that's important to watch. The backdrop is this survey about free speech. The Republicans wanted to see on university campuses. It got pulled back.
Right.
There's criticism of that. So they're really heightened kind of sensitivity to this. I know, by the way, Steve Noss, who is a longtime critic of UW, is talking about if this is how you're going to go, UW, we shouldn't give you more taxpayer money and all that kind of good stuff. So depending on who's a governor, come January, it could be an interesting budget for UW system.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Also, just want to touch on, if you have a television, you're probably, of course, seeing a lot of campaign ads right now, but you're going to start seeing some new ones. For the first time, U.S. Senate candidate Mandela Barnes released his first campaign ad. And he talked about kind of the middle class and fighting inflation. He was seen kind of pushing around a grocery cart. And ironically, Rebecca Clayfish also had a very similar ad in a grocery store talking about inflation. And so we're going to just kind of see more of these, JR, as we inch closer to the August primary. And we have Elizabeth Warren campaigning for Mandela Barnes this weekend, today in Milwaukee and Madison. And Kalaith Fish also secured the endorsement from Nikki Haley, who's the former U.S. ambassador to the U.N. and governor of South Carolina. So probably just a lot more money funneling into both of these campaigns and finally trying to get on the airwaves.
So Barnes' campaign ad, notable because we've talked about this before, both Lazary and Galewski have been on the air. We've seen the polls tighten in that race. Now, I'm not sure how tight they actually are, but that said, there's some momentum for Lazary and Galewski. Barnes, there's some pressure on him to get up on the air to, like, make sure he can blunt that. We are 2 months out from the, or 3 months out from the primary. Sorry.
That's right.
Losing track of my months.
I also couldn't say inflation earlier.
Getting closer. But noteworthy that Bandela said in his ad, I'm not like the other millionaires running for office, like elbow at Galewski and Lazary. We'll see how much he's going to spend. He said it's a multi-million dollar ad campaign. Well, I checked at the end of March, he had $1.6 million in the bank, had some bills to pay yet and some debts with that, so it wasn't truly $1.6 million. But if it's a multi-million dollar ad buy, it wasn't already paid for. It means they're counting on that being multi-million dollars over the next couple months, right? Now about Clayfish's ad, she talks about being an outsider. I'm going to fight the insiders. This is somebody who spent 8 years as lieutenant governor whose husband, who's in the ad, is a lobbyist. So, yes, Clayfish fought the insiders in 2010. She was not the Madison pick for lieutenant governor. Actually, if you go through the emails that came to light from the John Doe investigation, Scott Walker seems not happy about Rebecca as the nominee for lieutenant governor. They preferred somebody else. So, yeah, she took on the establishment one. But how do you argue you're not establishment when you've been in public office and your husband is a former lawmaker who's also now a lobbyist? It's an interesting dynamic for her. But it gets at where the base is, right? They want an outsider, a fighter, somebody who's not part of this, whatever they're angry about. They're right. Angry about something. They're not sure who they'd be angry about, angry at other than the establishment. So she's trying to, like, walk that fine line with the messaging in her ads.
And we'll see if that even, you know, resonates with voters, mm-hmm. if people remember, you know, from back when she was in office, and if people actually have maybe done the research on who her husband is. I think those are questions that she might have to face after the primary, or excuse me, if she wins the primary. Also, maybe some questions at the convention we might be asking her about. Speaking of the,
Okay, dual track for Clayfish, yeah. Touting her accomplishments with Scott Walker, like Right to Work, Act 10,
right.
But also saying she's an outsider. It's kind of an interesting, they're proven conservative, that's her benchmark, right, her call. Also going to fight the insiders.
But it's a message that we're hearing from all four candidates. So yes. They're fighting for that same message. It makes sense that she's going with that. So speaking of the state convention, I will be there for CBS 58. JR, you will be there for Wiz Politics. We're going to be there for the long run. So we will have full coverage for you. You can both follow us on Twitter and watch both of our coverage. And of course, next week, we will have the biggest recap of all the highlights. For now, well, that will do it for this week. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm JR Ross.
Thanks for joining us.
This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.